potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we have an even more packed show than we did last week. We've got five movies we're going to be talking about. That's Neighbors, Legends of Oz, Dorothy Returns, Mom's Night Out, The Double, and Stage Fright. We've got a bunch of news. Of course, there's going to be Star Wars news thrown in there because that's what's happening in Hollywood today. We're also going to be having just a wee bit of the trailer park. I turned a little Irish leprechaun there for a second. And there's also going to be an interview with the directors of Mom's Night Out, John and Andy Irwin. So stay tuned for that near the end of the show. But before we get to all that, here's some paperwork, how to get a hold of us. If you want to reach me by email, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456, 740-205-6456. You can go to the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com, go to facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, or find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's move on to the news. I've already taken my shirt off in the magical studio in the sky. It's that kind of party. That is what's happening tonight in the magical studio in the sky. This is also in honor of Neighbors, because I want my flabby chest to be out there with Seth Rogen's to sort of counteract the sexiness of Zac Efron. But that has nothing to do with news. What does have to do with news is Star Wars. Star Wars made huge news last week because of the release of the cast. Suddenly there was a cast photo, and we knew that Episode 7 was in fact underway, at least in rehearsals. Whether or not digital images were going through the camera yet, who knows? But they're supposed to be shooting soon. The big news this week, there's two of them. The first one is the name of the Episode 7, which it's not confirmed, but there's a lot of buzz about what it might be, and the name is, get ready, here it is, Star Wars Episode 7, The Ancient Fear. It's not about Joan Rivers, don't worry. But there's also another bit of news, and I don't know if I'd call this news, because this is a little bit kind of well known. I mean, this was speculated, sort of like the cast, when they announced that, in fact, Adam Driver is going to be in the cast. That was not a big surprise because they'd been rumored for months. The bit of news that have turned the fanboys on their ear is the fact that Disney has come out and said there's going to be at least three. Key word in this is at least. So there's going to be at least three Star Wars spinoff movies expected to come out. And much speculation is that it's going to be the Han Solo film, sort of telling his origin, telling the origin of Yoda, telling the origin of Boba Fett. And of course, there had to be thrown out there. Somebody in an article I read said, well, of course, there's going to be not overlapping timelines. Well, of course not, because Yoda's dead. Spoiler alert, he dies in like 1983. That was in Return of the Jedi, he dies. So, of course, Yoda's not going to be in Episode 7 unless he's in ghostly form. But they're going to tell his story, and that's great. I actually love this idea. Some people are saying there's going to be too much Star Wars. Personally, I think you can never have too much Star Wars, because I love Star Wars. But I think these are nice one-off movies. What this will do is it'll give a chance to establish a young Han Solo. It'll establish a new actor to play Han Solo. So we're not trying to bring back Harrison Ford, you know, when he's 86 years old to play Han Solo as a young man anymore. The other thing this is doing is they're trying to work this like the Avengers. Of course, Disney, I wouldn't say Disney masterminded the Avengers, because they sort of picked it up mid-race, because Paramount and Marvel Studios had put this together, but they're using the Avenger model for Star Wars more effectively than the Justice League, as the news from the Justice League, because that's what the Han Solo, Yoda, and Boba Fett movies are going to be. These are going to be like Thor and Captain America movies, where they're not going to be expected to be the huge movie, like Episode 7 is going to make $1 billion. It just is. But the Han Solo movie, well, it's probably good for $500, $600 million worldwide. That's what they're hoping to get. They're hoping to get these bridge movies that'll keep people's interest and keep it in the collective conscious. And even though there's people saying, oh, you're going to get fatigue and there's going to be too much Star Wars coming out, they're talking about a movie a year. There's, of course, the new trilogy over the next 10 years and, of course, all these spinoff films, at least three. Remember, at least three. So starting in 2015, it's going to be Star Wars every year. And if you think that you're going to have too much Star Wars, you have to remember we've pretty much had one to two Marvel movies every year since 2008. And that we haven't gotten fatigue on that yet. Anyways, the fanboys are going bonkers over this, and they should, because they have nothing else to do but go on the internet and write nasty comments in comment sections. But that's the bit of the Star Wars news. I had to talk about that because it's Star Wars and I love it. The next piece, and this is sort of peripheral because it is Marvel news, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was renewed on ABC, and Agent Carter, the series that's going to be about the love interest from Captain America, the first film, she's going to get her own series, and that's going to be developed. And the big question is this going to be as meh-worthy as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was? I quit watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. about halfway, I don't even think halfway through the season. It just didn't get me, and maybe it's going to be better in season two. It's not uncommon for a show to finally get some traction, but I have a problem with the superhero show that really doesn't have much superhero stuff going on, and it turns into sort of a Joss Whedon-esque version of The X-Files, but without aliens. I don't know. I'm not big on Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'll probably watch it when it comes on DVD. The next piece of news, Power Rangers reboot. That is in the works. This could go either way. I think it all depends on how the studio handles this. If they just go and go cheesy and goofy and silly and go like the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, it might actually be pretty funny and entertaining and good for kids. If it goes the way of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the way they're going, it's going to be a disaster. If this is going to be the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, The Dark is Rising, this will be a terrible movie and it will destroy the franchise. Another piece of franchise-destroying news is the Flintstones. They're going to be doing an animated film with Will Ferrell and Adam McKay involved. They don't know exactly. I'm assuming Adam McKay is going to direct. Will Ferrell be playing Fred? I don't know. I guess they're hoping for that. Here's the thing with the Flintstones. If it's going to be done in sort of the mindset of Mr. Peabody and Sherman, great. It'll be fun. But if they try and make it too goofy, and there's a certain rusticness to the Flintstones because they were cavemen, that could work. I think this could work, but you know what? Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, they're very funny, but we might end up with Land of the Lost again, which was a fun movie, but not exactly appropriate for kids. And Flintstones has to be appropriate for kids to work. And if it ends up being as bad as the Scooby-Doo movies, God knows what happens there. The next piece of news, the final piece of news I wanted to hit on, is Insidious Chapter 3 is a go. And is we're going to miss it this year, but you know, next year in 2015, we're going to get Insidious 3. It's going to be directed by Lee Wennell, who wrote the other movies and is a partner with James Wan. James Wan exited the series because he's tired of doing horror, because he's been doing horror for the last 10 years, and he's moving on to Fast and Furious. Lee Wannell is now at the helm. And I have faith in this guy. I think he knows the characters. He knows the story. And we could use some fresh blood. I think too many times redirecting the same people, the same characters, can burn out a director. And we actually talked about last week when we were talking about Zack Snyder doing the Justice League movies. With that noise, we got to move on into the trailer park. We only have one trailer this week, simply because we're so packed with other things to talk about. But I do want to hit on this one. This is Tammy. It opens on July 2nd. This is starring Melissa McCarthy in every single character she's ever played in the history of cinema.
The robber was 5'2", white, female. She was super bossy.
Give me some pies. Give me some of the good pies. No screwing around.
You knocked over a Topper Jacks.
Grandma, I don't know where I'm going.
I've always wanted to go to Niagara Falls. How about a beer?
No.
Whiskey?
No.
Oh, my God. You're pregnant.
I'm driving a car.
It's not that I don't mind obnoxious, sophomoric, basal movies, because we got one coming up in the show. We got Neighbors. What bothers me about Tammy, and what had bothered me about The Heat, and what bothered me, well, not Bridesmaid, I thought she was actually funny, and I didn't like Bridesmaid, but she was good in it. But it bothered me about Identity Thief. Melissa McCarthy's better than this. She is a brilliantly hilarious person, and all they're doing is rehashing the same character we've seen before. I wanted to see her do something better. It's not progressive. It's not advanced. It's not good for women to have your only characters you're going to be playing as a big fat slob that nobody likes. And you only play that. People need to play something different. She should get a really good part. I'm not talking about cancer drama, dying type movie. I'm saying a broad comedy that's not just about a broad. I don't hold out much hope for Tammy. I have to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about some of the independent films this week, The Double and Stage Fright. We'll be right back. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies here, coming back at you. We're going to be rolling into the movie review segment. Like I said, we got five movies to talk about. That's a lot. So let's just jump right in. The first film is released by Magnolia Pictures. You can actually get it on demand if you do not have it in a nearby theater. It's releasing in theaters now, but it is directed by Richard Ayoade. I think that is how you pronounce his name. I apologize, sir, if I got it wrong. And in the film, it stars Jesse Eisenberg playing a mousy worker at an oppressive company who suddenly discovers his own doppelganger is working there, but is far more successful at everything from work to his love life.
Have you spoken to the new employee?
James. Yeah, sure, I met him.
But did you notice anything strange about him? I mean, did he remind you of anyone?
I've never met anyone like James.
What is so unique about him?
This guy just started. Why can't you work like that?
This man is a fraud.
Stop following me!
He stole my face.
This is based on a short story by Fyodor Dostoevsky, and I've never read it. So, I mean, I'm not into Russian literature. I admit there's vast valleys of non-knowledge about the literature behind the Russian stories. I had the same problem when Anna Karenina came out. I hadn't read that thing. So I don't know if this is at all even accurate to the Dostoevsky story. But I have seen the movie. And I'm a huge fan of Richard Ayoade because if you don't know who he is, if you've ever watched The IT Crowd, which was a brilliant British show that just ended like last year, he played in that. And he was in the movie called The Watch. And unfortunately, he was the best thing in that movie. But it was with Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller. They kind of stole the spotlight. But he was extremely hilarious. He's a great comedian, but he's also very quirky. And if you've watched The IT Crowd, it feels exactly like a movie that was directed by Moss. He gives it a weird sci-fi. We've seen these sort of sci-fi retro futuristic movies, stuff like Brazil or things like Delicatessen, where it takes place reasonably in the future or feels like it's in the future, but it has all this archaic technology. And he just absorbs himself in that, and it has this 1940s look and feel of this clinical office that looks very depressing to work in. And it's a bizarre story because it's this guy discovering he has a doppelganger that no one seems to understand is his doppelganger. No one sees the similarities. Everybody sees the difference. They think it's a totally different person. And you never quite know if this is in his mind, if he's going insane, if this is actually happening. How tied together are they? Or is he actually two different people, or is this just a projection that he has? Is it a change from scene to scene? It's a very straightforward film, but it feels extremely dense. By dense, not meaning it's thick or hard to understand, but dense the way that Under the Skin was dense, where you can think a lot about it and you can examine the film and you can probably watch it multiple times and try and figure out what's exactly going on. Or it could be that he's just making it weird. And that's fun too, because it's quirky and bizarre, and I was enthralled with it. It's not as expertly directed as something like Brazil. I think he still has he's got a little maturity to get as a director. He's done some brilliant things with it, but this is only like his second. I think this is only his second feature that he's directed. The other one was Submarine several years ago, and he did some TV. But I would love to see what this guy would do with bigger and bigger things and capping him off at a $10 million budget, because this stuff's not mainstream in the least. Still, if you can find it near you in the big screen, it's awesome. If not, you can get it on demand through like Amazon and iTunes and rent it while it's in theaters elsewhere if you live in flyover country like a lot of us do. But anyways, The Double kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie we're going to be talking about is Stage Fright, and it's about a musical theater summer camp that is haunted by the return of a serial killer backstage.
I have to get dressed. We can't do this now.
We slave, preparing for opening night. Rehearse all day, it almost came perfectly right.
I think about Mom a lot. Maybe this is what I'm supposed to do.
You actually want to compete with those theater geeks? Those kids aren't normal, Ken.
There has been an accident.
Isn't it wrong to sing and dance when someone just died?
This is a movie that is tailor-made for people who love 80s slashers and musical theater. That seems like they don't necessarily fit together. You would be surprised at how many people I know that love both 80s slasher films and musical theater. And in fact, one of my friends, a friend of the show, Fozzie Bear on Twitter, I tweeted to him and I said, hey, look, if you have not seen Stage Fright yet, you need to see it. And he's like, oh, absolutely. I'm going to invite people over, have a slumber party and watch it. That's the crazy sort of retro feel to this film. It has all the elements of an 80s slasher. It has the summer camp. It has the stock characters, the good girl, the wimpy hero, and the snotty girl at camp, and the good looking guy, and you got the friend, and you've got the back. And then of course you have this serial kill in the back, and it dips into so many different wells, but it manages to do it without polluting all the wells. It has throwbacks to Friday the 13th, but it also has throwbacks to more stuff like musical horror, stuff like Repo, the Genetic Opera. It sort of tips its hat at that, and it plays with musical style. It has Meatloaf in it, which is fantastic in itself, simply because he's Meatloaf, but he's also doing a movie that's paying homage to films that were around when he was making his most well-known music. But it's also told straight. Here's the thing with send-ups and deconstructive movies. They are very easily turned into spoofs. And if there's too many winks and nods at the audience, it is no longer brilliant and it just becomes hackneyed and stupid. It never gets there. They don't point at the 80s, tropes and go, see what we did there? I know what I mean? Nudge, nudge. No, they don't do that. They just throw it out there and let you assume it. And if you've seen enough of these movies, if you've seen enough of the Friday the 13th movies and the summer camp, sleepaway camp, and these kind of really, sometimes really horrible slasher films, you get it. And it's very, very funny, but also very grisly. It's shot like a horror movie. There's real crazy kills in this movie, and there's some real crazy deaths in this movie. It's very bloody, and it works. And you know what? It even works to be scary. I'm not saying that I was, you know, wetting myself on the couch when I was watching this thing, but I did appreciate that if somebody is not used to horror movies and they think, oh, let's watch this musical. This is nice. I love the sound of music. Let's watch this one. This looks good. I could see it just completely messing somebody up. Not for life. Those movies are different. You don't need to see a movie. You don't want to have a movie that messes up your date for life. You just want to have a movie that gets her to jump in your arms and squeeze you tight so you can be like, hey, baby, I turned really creepy there for a second. What was that all about? I've been watching too many horror movies. Anyway, Stage Fright's a lot of fun. It is an irreverent, silly, but coldly written piece that works as a slasher and as a musical. And with that, I say Stage Fright kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
So with that, I need to go to a break. We're going to be talking about a couple more films, the bigger ones that are opening this weekend. We've got Neighbors and Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return, coming up next. Fat Guys at the Movies, still going strong. Still have my shirt off in the magical studio in the sky. Burn that into your brain. My apologies to the audience out there. Yes, but this is the kind of party it is. It's a frat house party this weekend. And then it's going to turn into Mother's Day. But right now, it's a frat house party. And that is what we're doing, watching Neighbors. We're going to be talking about that with Seth Rogen and Zac Efron, one of whom looks almost as good as I do in the swimsuit. So let's talk about Neighbors. Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne play a couple who discover a frat has just moved next door in the suburbs, and a feud about noise and partying escalates beyond their control.
Look, new neighbors.
Wow.
What do we got?
Is that a fraternity? We have to go over there. We've got to be cool.
And we say, by the way, keep it down.
Well, we won't say it like that. Just like,
Keep it down.
What are you doing with this?
Keep it down.
Just don't. We've overworked it. Are you ready for a show?
Call the cops.
You called about your neighbors?
No.
We have call ID. We're cops. Everybody has call ID.
These kind of movies tend to go one of two ways for me. They're either very, very funny or they're excruciating to watch. Unfortunately, this one falls into the former category. It has some extremely hilarious moments. It's also extremely inappropriate. This is not the movie you want to take your mom to on Mother's Day. Unless she's into movies like Porky's and Revenge of the Nerds. Every couple of years, we get a good old-fashioned Greek comedy. Revenge of the Nerds, you had Animal House, obviously, years and years ago. You even had House Bunny, which was a clever and fun little movie. This one isn't exactly that, because it is told almost primarily from Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne's point of view. But it does have a lot of those elements you'd expect from a frat house party movie. And this movie is crass. It is obnoxious. It is offensive. It is sexual. It is extremely R-rated. It involves body humor and drug humor and alcohol humor and sex humor all over the place. It is probably one of the most sophomoric ones you're going to see in a while, but doggone if I didn't find myself chuckling and laughing through a whole bunch of it. There are some laugh out loud moments, and that to me is what proves a good comedy. You know, it can be stupid, it can be annoying, and the characters could not work. But if there are things that happen that you catch yourself saying, that's pretty funny, and laughing and chuckling, that makes a good comedy. And that's what this does. This takes a lot of the old jokes and reassembles them in a way that with the delivery and the approach, it actually works. Really, the only problem I had with it is, and this might be me being a bit of a prude, can Seth Rogen do a movie where he plays somebody who doesn't already smoke dope? One of the biggest problems with this movie is it's hard to get onto Seth Rogen's side because he is such a pothead. I mean, he could play the president of the United States and he would be smoking pot all the time. He could be playing the Pope. You know, Seth Rogen is the Pope who smokes dope. And that is who Seth Rogen is. And I know he's got an opinion on this, and that's fine. But try and work outside of your comfort zone. What saves that part of it is you've got Rose Byrne, who's actually very funny in this. I've never been a huge fan of Rose Byrne. Oh, yeah, she's beautiful and all. She's attractive, sure. But she's mostly known for her dramatic turns, even if it's like a scary movie like the Insidious films. But she's not known for necessarily comedy. She's played comedy well before in stuff like Get Him to the Greek and Bridesmaids, but usually it's always as sort of like the straight man or the second fiddle or the response. She is not driving the jokes in a lot of these movies. This one she is, because you need the sensible, reasonable person, because when you have Seth Rogen there and you know he's high as a kite throughout the whole movie, it's hard to get behind him and say, yes, you need to be a responsible father and turn down the noise at 10 o'clock. But still, this is me overanalyzing the film. It's a funny movie. If you're a teenager or a college student or in a frat, or if you just like Seth Rogen movies, you'll probably really enjoy this. And it's got a great cast. Like I said, Rose Byrne, Seth Rogen, Zac Efron's very funny in it and generous in his acting. He's not just there as a pretty face, but there's also a great performance by Dave Franco in this, who's not known as a great actor. But he does a pretty good job in this movie as the lackey, the sidekick for Zac Efron. So with that, I'm going to say that Neighbors kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie we're going to be talking about is Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return. When the Wicked Witch's brother, the Jester, takes over Oz, the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodsman, and the Cowardly Lion bring Dorothy back over the rainbow for help.
Emerald City needs all the heart and courage it can get right now.
Got your back, straw man. You can count on us.
Run! That's the plan?
The Emerald City faces its greatest challenge.
Don't
mess with the Jester!
And there's only one person who can save the enchanted world.
Dorothy.
Dorothy.
Dorothy Gale?
I thought you'd be taller. I can't believe it, Toto. We're really back in Oz.
This is not a terrible movie. I feel like it's such a terrible review to say that. It's not a terrible movie, but it has a very narrow focus. I think this is a movie that little kids are going to like, younger kids are going to like. I mean, like 8 or 9 tops, maybe 10, if they really try to still cling to their childhood before moving into the tweens. I took my son, who's 10, and he enjoyed it. But he's one of those kids that he still wants to cling to the childhood moments, because he sees his older brother who's turning into a teenager, and I think that kind of terrifies him. But this is not made for anybody above single digits in age. I'm wondering why they released it now, because it probably would have done better if it were released sometime last year to sort of live off of the buzz from Oz the Great and Powerful. And it's nothing like that. It's not that movie at all. It's obviously, it's this computer animated, and the animation doesn't look great by today's standard. It would look great 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago, but by today's standards, it seems very rudimentary and very basic. It looks like a Disney animated sequel, direct-to-video from like 2006 or so. Reminds me a lot of Happily Never After, if you saw that film. Not a whole lot of people did. It's good. It has good intentions. And I mean, it's got a decent voice cast. You've got Dan Aykroyd in there sort of phoning his performance. Lea Michele from Glee plays Dorothy. You have Martin Short playing the villain. He's probably the best voice actor in the movie. He does a great job. But he's played these kind of characters before. Martin Short has played the villain in children's movies quite a few times. So this is sort of similar ground for him. You know, it really tries. I mean, it's based on books by both L. Frank Baum and his grandson. So it does have history in Oz and in the Baum legends. But it just tries too hard at times. It throws a lot of things at you. And it's almost like it's like it was an okay idea that they really pushed into fruition rather than letting it grow into fruition. It's sort of like Craig. If you watch the Parks and Rec, it's like I imagine Craig directing this movie and just going, we're making a sequel to The Wizard of Oz, and it's going to have candy and marshmallows and real estate, and it's going to be beautiful. So there. That's kind of what I feel it has. And so not all of it sticks to the wall. But, you know, when I saw it, I was just like, that was my reaction. Just sort of a shrug, knowing that I'm in my 40s and not at all the target market for this. Upon reflection, as I thought more about it, I'm like, it's a cute enough movie. I mean, if you're looking for something for the kids that mom can take, this weekend for Mother's Day, this could work. This could be a perfectly fine film. It's not, I think it's worth matinee prices. I wouldn't pay full price. It's kind of coming at a time when there isn't a whole lot of kids options out there. And maybe people are looking for that because they don't want to have something as intense as Spider-Man or Captain America. It's a sweet little movie. It's a good effort. You know, it's kind of that thing you want to pat on the head and say, that was a good try. It's, you know, it's going to be forgotten in a couple weeks, but you know, it's not terrible, but I do have to say, in the official Fat Guys rating scale, it does kind of suck.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
All right, with that, we need to go to a break. Coming into the final segment, we're going to be talking about box office, and I've got my interview with John and Andy Irwin from Mom's Night Out, plus a review of that movie and the DVD roundup.
Shake that.
Guys of the Movies, we are almost done, but we are not forgotten. We got more to do in this segment. Here, Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies coming at you. Let's jump right in. We've got one more movie to hit, and that is Mom's Night Out. In this one, three women plan an evening away from the kids, leaving them at home with the men, but soon things spiral completely out of control.
I planned this Mom's Night thing for Saturday.
You planned a Mom's Night?
Yes, sister.
What's the worst thing that can happen?
They could get maimed. I could lose both children. It's getting hot in here.
Joey, you're supposed to be watching our baby. Who has him?
Phones.
He's at the tattoo parlor.
Who would bring a baby to a tattoo parlor? That's dumb.
I know.
That is real dumb.
Phones, phones.
my baby.
I called Caprice, and Caprice said she'd take him.
Where's the van?
Oh, I had tonight playing out differently in my mind.
I have an interview with the directors of this just coming in right after this review. And they're going to talk a little bit about the approach to this movie and kind of why it was made. It's a wholesome movie. It's not a wholesome movie, but it's not The Hangover. It's not trying to be raunchy. It's good-natured. It's something you watch as a family. It's something you can take mom to on Mother's Day. It is made by a group that is known for Christian faith-based movies. And there is a message in here. There is a Christian faith-based message in there. It's not overt. It's not what the movie's about. Like, say, you know, God's not dead and heaven is for real and Son of God. Those are blatantly about religion. This is not about religion, but it has a bit of a message to it, and it does kind of drive it home a little bit too much in the final act. But ultimately, just it's good, clean fun, and that's I think what they set out to do. And you know what? They did a good job. And I'm somewhat critical of faith-based movies because they can tend to be really cheesy, and they can be preachy, and they can be corny, and sometimes they got really crappy production value. This one isn't. This one actually has really good production value, especially considering it's a low-budget film. But I mean, it has like car chases and helicopter shots and some stunt work. It looks like a regular good old film. It doesn't look like it's been thrown together. And you know what? It's funny. I have to say, there's plenty of time. You know how I talked about with Neighbors, where I say the mark of a good comedy is if you see a film and you go, okay, yeah, that's funny. That's funny. And you laugh out loud. There are some very funny moments, especially if you're a parent who've been through the days of having small children. You totally will get a lot of these jokes. So I'm going to say that Mom's Night Out kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Now, here I've got my interview with John and Andy Irwin. They're the directors of it. But let's just go ahead and hear what they have to say.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
How often do you make sure that your wife gets her Mom's Night Out?
We kind of worked out a system. We've had some older couples that are kind of a little bit wiser that have kind of helped us figure that out early on, and try to take at least one every week and a half. Uh-huh. To get one, and then once every week and a half I get one, which I'm real simple. I just go to the movies and hang out. So we try to be regular as we can with that, so that we don't get burnt out. We just kind of get away from being shell shock parents.
You know, I think moms in general, a lot of times they take care of everyone but themselves. And so that was kind of the goal of this movie, is to say, hey, I'm so bad at telling you how important you are, telling you what a great job you do, and go have a night, go have some fun, or let me take you. And that was kind of the whole goal of the movie for all of us, for myself, Andy, and producer Kevin Downs included, was to make a movie that our wives would appreciate and would be meaningful to them and would make them laugh out loud and give them a night off. It's like 40% of women in America suffer from kind of depression because of what they see online, on Facebook, Pinterest, on the front covers of magazines. And, you know, they feel like they don't measure up. And so I think somebody coming along and saying, hey, what you do is important, and go have a night, go have some fun, go laugh out loud, I think is very meaningful to my wife. She loves it, and to people like her. And so I hope the film's a gift, you know, a gift to them.
One of the things I found interesting about it was it's obviously comes from a faith-based perspective. I mean, the message is there, but that's not what the movie's about. And was that intentional? Did you want to? Were you trying to sort of, you know, bridge out a little bit more and, you know, broaden the market as well?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, and that's obviously a buzz right now. I mean, faith-based films are a huge buzz. And, you know, with this film, to me, I go to movies often with my wife. I take my daughter on daddy dates to movies, and I go to be entertained. You know, I'm looking for that emotional experience. You know, it's an escape. We live in a super stressed culture, USA Today calls it. And so it's this escape, and I'm looking to be entertained. So the goal is to do that first. And comedy is a really frustrating genre for me, because I'm a huge fan of comedy. And yet, USA Today ran a great article in the Life section, front page of Life section, that was just R stands for raunch, you know, and the idea that there's 15 comedies coming out and they're mostly all rated R, and they're really kind of pushing the boundaries even of an R rating. And so it stinks, because those great comedies like What About Bob or the Steve Martin movies or whatever, they kind of don't exist anymore. And that frustrates me, because I want to laugh. I want to go see comedies. And yet my desire for entertainment is pitted against my value system. And I don't like that. And I think a lot of people are like me, and we don't have an alternative. And so that was one of the goals, is to give an alternative and to make a movie for moms and to celebrate moms. And that is a very Christian thing to do. And again, we live in a culture of comparison. And my brother and I directed music videos before we did movies. And I've spent 8,000 $50,000 for one person in one day to do hair extensions for a country star. So everything that people see on the front of magazine covers, that's manufactured. You know, that's not real. And yet, we compare ourselves to it. So that really is the theme that's put and infused into this movie is, hey, quit trying to be perfect. Quit trying to be something that's not real. Just be you and be and celebrate yourself and how much you're loved just for who you are. And to me, that's a very Christian virtue, and it's really cool.
When we went into, you know, we weren't leaning one way or another as far as we didn't try one way or another. We feel like, as storytellers, our first obligation is to tell a good story and to entertain. And so when we stepped into it, we said, this needs to be funny. It needs to compete within its genre, which is comedy. But within that, comedy was a great opportunity to look at the worldview of kind of a Christian culture without it being the butt of a joke and without it being just to kind of present it in a positive light and to tell it honest to what those people in the story go through.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me, and we'll see you in the movies.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, buddy.
Mom's Night Out is out. It is in theaters nationwide. You can check it out this weekend. Go see it. It's worth checking out. And it's a nice alternative to Neighbors because it's not at all like that. And so it gives you an alternative to take your mom or your grandmother to a movie this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on real quickly to box office winners. Was I correct with last week's? I said $88 million for Spider-Man. And you know what? I was pretty doggone close. It made just under $92 million, which is that's a pretty close estimate, especially for somebody who just kind of pulls these things out of his butt now and then. This is significant for a bad way because it's the lowest grossing Spider-Man movie that also had IMAX bump and it had a 3D bump. It still was the lowest grossing Spider-Man movie domestically and the worst reviewed. It's not going to win anything domestically. It'll be profitable overseas, more for the fact of the expansion of 3D and the expansion of IMAX and the expansion of just movie theaters into many markets. But ultimately, I think this is suffering from franchise fatigue. And that's one of the things I said with this movie is that if it came out before 2008, it would have been judged by a different yardstick. But now we're in a different world. We're in a post-Avengers, post-Dark Knight world. This is not living up to it. And I think this is not going to be good for the sequels and the spinoffs. This week, I think the one that's going to win is going to be Neighbors. I think it's good for $42 million. Spider-Man will come out second. It'll be close, but not too close. And with that sound, we now have to go into the world-famous DVD roundup. The first movie I want to hit on is Veronica Mars. This is, of course, the Kickstarter-fueled campaign that brought back the TV show, starring Kristen Bell. It came out in limited release and on demand back in March, I think. I'd watched some of the show. I hadn't watched all of it. And what's nice about the movie is it gives this nice little recap. It's a long opening. It has this opening segment that explains everything. It takes a while, but it's worth doing for just to refresh people who hadn't watched the show recently and also to bring in new viewers. This is a fun movie. If you're a fan of the show, if you're a Marshmallow, you're going to love this thing. It has tons of in-jokes for you. If you are a newbie and you've never watched Veronica Mars, you can pick up on it. It's pretty simple. It felt like an extended episode, but a bigger episode. Check it out. And if you get the Blu-ray, it has some really nice features and documentaries about the Kickstarter campaign and the process by how this came about. And it's actually kind of fascinating to watch the behind the scenes of this. The other films, The Deep End, this is from Fox for Searchlight, and it stars Tilda Swinton as a woman who accidentally gets involved in murder and extortion and is just trying to survive. Not a bad little thriller, kind of an independent thriller. Jay and Silent Bob's groovy cartoon movie is out on video on demand. It's not out on DVD yet. This came with their roadshow last year, I believe. The problem with this one is, I'm sure it's funny to people who smoke dope. I'm sure Seth Rogen loves it. But it's based on his Blunt Man and Chronic comics books that were in Chasing Amy. And I'm sure this was brilliant in 1997 when Chasing Amy came out. This just seems out of time now. It's all phallic jokes and gay jokes and just stuff that's really not funny anymore. And he's in his 40s. I mean, Kevin Smith is a little old to be doing a movie like this. There's also The Art of the Steal, which I reviewed a couple weeks ago. There's Rear Window on Blu-ray, fantastic Hitchcock film. Blazing Saddles, 40th anniversary on Blu-ray. And also Laverne and Shirley, the 8th and final season, without Shirley, but still called Laverne and Shirley. Stinker of the Week is Peekarama. These are Amazon-only available porn titles from the 70s and 80s. If you're getting these through Amazon, you're not using the internet properly for porn. So get with the program. I got to wrap up the show. We are done. Next week, we're going to be talking about Godzilla and $1 Million Arm. So until then, have a fat time at the movies.